Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. There aren't many things that a visually impaired person can't do if they really put their minds to it. But one thing that still presents a challenge is driving a car. Well, maybe someday that will become a reality.
We'll speak with Mark Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind, about their Jernigan Institute and the efforts to create a car that the blind can drive independently. And we'll get to ask Mark what it was like when he, being totally blind, was able to drive that car. But first, for our tip of the week, this week's tip comes from Mark Riccobono.
When we believe that there is something possible, we can get to much greater outcomes when we work at it and learn from our experience.
Well, that's great advice. We always have to be learning from things we do, and that's the way we keep growing.
And these words of Mark's apply to so many aspects of life, and in particular, today's topic. So in general, if you try something, whether or not it goes well, you can always learn from what you've experienced on the previous go-round. But also, that's how the engineers were able to make such great strides in developing this car that the blind were able to drive.
Support for Eyes on Success is made possible by
Hadley Institute for the Blind and Visually Impaired, offering the 2017 New Venture Business Competition to help blind entrepreneurs turn their ideas into actual startups. More information and submission criteria are at www.hadley.edu/NVC. Let's start by meeting Mark and learning a bit about the National Federation of the Blind in general before we get down to the specifics of today's topic.
I'm Mark Riccobono, president of the National Federation of the Blind, and I live in Baltimore, Maryland.
And are you blind yourself?
Yes, I am blind. I was diagnosed as being legally blind at age 5 from glaucoma, and I pretty much lost vision all through my younger years.
And although we've done several shows about the NFB and some of its services in the past, maybe you can give people a quick summary of what the NFB does.
The National Federation of the Blind is the oldest and largest organization of blind people in the United States. Of is in some ways the most important word in our name. We're a grassroots membership organization, and we really work on raising expectations for blind people because we recognize that low expectations create obstacles between blind people and our dreams. So we work on civil rights, educational programs. We work on creating resources and services where they're needed. For example, our National Federation of the Blind Newsline program, which is available not just to members of the Federation, but any blind person in the United States, or developing innovative technologies like our KNFB reader. And we work on advocacy issues at all levels, local, state, national, and most importantly, we provide a nationwide network of blind people who work together to conquer the barriers that exist for blind people. And so any question on blindness, if I don't know the answer, I'm two or three people away from having someone in our organization who at least can get us closer to an answer.
And if any of our listeners are interested in more information about the topics that you've just mentioned, we've done complete episodes on the KNFB Reader and most recently the KNFB Reader app and NFB Newsline and several other major projects from the NFB. We're big fans.
Well, I appreciate that.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. Success, 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 success.
This week's focus topic is the Blind Driver Challenge, sponsored by the National Federation of the Blind's Jernigan Institute.
So later on in the show, we want to focus about driverless cars and the Blind Driver Challenge, but maybe you can tell us a little bit about the Jernigan Institute before we get started.
Sure. The National Federation of the Blind Jernigan Institute is really our forward-looking center where we develop innovative training, education, research projects based on the hopes and dreams of blind people. We get involved in research in the areas that blind people are interested in. So how to better provide and teaching instruction to blind people, especially we're really interested in the area of tactile fluency and how to teach blind people how to deal with tactile graphics and 3D models and to get engaged with particularly learning in science, technology, engineering, and math. We do a lot of work with technology accessibility and working with corporations on building in a culture of accessibility into their corporations so that all of their technologies are accessible. We also continue to look at how to create standards for accessibility, whether it's on the web or in published books. We've been very active in the distribution of the EPUB 3 standard, which is going to transform the way books are made accessible to people. And we get involved in university research projects that are exploring questions about blindness.
So in terms of blind people doing anything, you've been sponsoring the Blind Driver Challenge for a number of years now. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is and how it got started?
Sure. The Blind Driver Challenge goes back to the early part of this century when our president at the time, Mark Maurer, started asking people, why can't blind people drive? We say blind people can do everything, but we take for granted that blind people will never be able to drive. Well, he started asking, why not? If we believe blind people have capacity, if we believe blind people can think and react, then this is simply an access to information problem. Now, it's more dynamic than getting print off of a page, but it's an access to information problem. And if we believe blind people have capacity, can't we work together with bright engineers and our ideas to build a system that would provide information to allow a blind person to drive a car? That was the theory. And we put out the Blind Driver Challenge as a way to attract universities, engineers, technology companies to work on this problem. And a lot of people looked at it and said, oh, that's a hard problem.
Did you get a lot of interest from the engineering community?
We started to find some people that wanted to work on it and eventually got to Virginia Tech, and Dr. Dennis Hong was a professor there. He's now at UCLA, and he invited us to work with him on this. And they at Virginia Tech had built cars that drive themselves through the DARPA challenge. This was really the early government investment in autonomous vehicles, cars that drive themselves. And he said, well, we build vehicles that drive themselves. We'll just put you in the back seat and push a button and declare victory. And I said, well, no, that's not what we want. We want blind people to actually be able to drive. This really shocked them. I said, you know, we want to be able to crash the car. Not that we want to crash the car, but we want the possibility of crashing the car. Blind people have to actually do something. And the idea here was to build interfaces that blind people could use to do things that obviously, almost everybody, including blind people, thought was impossible. So we started working on it. Very hard problem, using good engineering, smart people, and real blind people in the process. And we developed interface technology that basically could be put into a car and would allow a blind person, after training, like any new driver, to drive a course, avoid obstacles, not just stationary obstacles, but dynamic obstacles. You can see the YouTube video of me driving the car at Daytona, avoiding things in the road, actually avoiding boxes that were thrown out in front of me, and ultimately doing a passing maneuver, passing another vehicle. That initiative helped us understand that we can truly go beyond where we've thought in terms of building interface technology for blind people to get dynamic access to information in alternative ways to vision.
Can you describe the interface? So you've had experience driving one of these cars. What kind of information did you get to describe what was in front of you that you were supposed to navigate around?
So the interfaces that we built for the blind driver challenge were all vibrotactile. We very consciously did not provide any information in audio form because, of course, we always knew we could provide that. But we wanted to leave the audio channel open. We also wanted the engineers to think more broadly. Everybody thinks blind person got to be audio. Well, maybe, but you know, if you're driving in a car, you might want to listen to the radio or, you know, something like that. So we wanted to avoid that if we could. So we built two very simple interfaces, vibrating motors in the seat of the car and a pair of gloves that the driver wears, a little bit like weightlifting gloves, so fingerless gloves that have vibrating motors on the back of the knuckles. And the gloves provide steering information, basically depending on which finger it's on. If it's on your right pinky, for example, that means a very sharp right turn. And as you turn to the right, the motors are going to step up toward your index finger. And when you've turned far enough, jump over to your left hand. So you're steering toward the vibrations. Now, this sounds a little bit complicated, but when we've tested it with blind people, it's very quickly intuitive. And we can very quickly teach blind people to follow steering directions.
You said there's also vibration devices in the seat. Can you describe what those are used for?
The seat cushion really conveys speed information. So braking, if you need to brake, or that you have plenty of speed before you get to the speed limit so that you could go faster, would be vibrating underneath your legs, and a quick stop would be vibrating very high on your back. Again, it sounds a little bit more complicated than it is. When you're actually doing it and learning it, it's very intuitive.
You're right. That does sound very cumbersome. How well did it work?
With these two basic interfaces, we're able to do all the things that I described. Drive a path, avoid obstacles, both moving and stationary. And it's a little hard to explain, but with training and use of this technology, you actually get to recognize the patterns of the vibrations. And through experience, you get to understand the environment around the car.
Presumably, because you lost your vision as a child, you've never had experience driving before this. How did that feel to you?
Well, you know, it went through a progression. At first, when we were testing the technology, it was a little scary because, you know, I was still also just kind of learning how to manage this vehicle. And we got to a point in testing the technology where we said, you know, we're going to demonstrate this at Daytona. The engineers got to be out of the car because that's what we're going to demonstrate. And there had always been an engineer sitting in the car, front seat or back seat, and you'd drive around with utilizing the technology and they wouldn't say anything a lot of the times, but you knew they were in the car. And so we said, okay, guys, it's time for you to get out.
So this is like taking off the training wheels.
Yeah. So we said, you know, if we're going to do this, we got to do it. So I will say that the first time we kicked the engineers out of the car, this was at the Virginia International Raceway. We actually had to rent a racetrack to do testing. And we kicked them out of the car, and I got in. I rolled down the window and turned on the radio. The police was on, which I thought was kind of funny. Started driving, and, you know, it was more empowering than even I had expected. There was a psychological barrier having someone in the car, even if they weren't doing anything. Just being in the car alone, a blind person driving, using this technology independently, making decisions, and that it worked was really empowering. And it began to demonstrate for me that when we believe that there is something possible, we can get to much greater outcomes when we work at it and learn from our experience.
To me, I marvel at how you're able to convey all of this information tactilely. You seem to have, by virtue of using vibrational devices in gloves, been able to access the hands, and then things you embedded in the seat, you accessed other parts of the body. So you're able to convey a lot more information than one might expect.
Yeah, and when really you break it down, it's breaking down the tasks of what do you need to do in driving, and that's why we started with speed and steering, and then figure out ways to convey the information and then testing it to make sure that it's authentic to blind people.
So this sounds like an interesting concept, and it sounds like with these vibrations, it's reasonable to navigate a well-defined course that was pretty empty of obstacles, but it seems like you wouldn't have enough information to know if there was, you know, a person in the middle of the road, or you said you passed a car at one point. How is that all accomplished?
Well, yeah, I mean, you do know if there's stuff in the road. Again, if you watch the video on our YouTube channel, The Nation's Blind, you'll see that I avoid boxes that weren't placed in the road. They're just kind of thrown out in front of me. Now, you don't know what the obstacles are with the current interfaces that we built. So you don't know if it's a box or a person or a dog or another car.
But you know you need to turn.
Exactly, exactly. And that's where the pivot point of this technology is really important. The goal here was not to get to a place where we're going to have blind drivers all over the streets of the United States, because we all know that where the technology is going is driverless cars. So the idea here was to demonstrate that we can build non-visual interfaces that blind people can use to get much more information and do much more dynamic things than were ever expected. And driving is a great example because it's a very hard challenge. Now, if we weren't on the verge of autonomous vehicles, we'd keep testing this technology and adding to it and testing different scenarios. But we know that we could build other interfaces to provide other information to blind people.
And we'll have the direct link to the video Mark mentioned in the show notes. And it's really interesting to watch. The entire video is narrated and captioned so everybody can appreciate it.
I take it there have been several of these blind driver challenges, and it started well before the feasibility of self-driving cars. Is this still a continuing project? Do you still have some more work to do to show some of these concepts?
Well, we do show off our blind drivable vehicle at demonstrations. We recently demonstrated it at the World Blind Union meeting in Orlando, Florida this summer. But our focus in the National Federation of the Blind now is on engaging with the technology companies, the car companies, the policymakers on autonomous vehicles, and what's going to happen with vehicles that drive themselves, and how blind people are going to have from the beginning, from the original build, equal access to those vehicles. We often know that blind people are the last to be thought of in terms of how do we build the technology for these individuals to use it. And what our constant message about driverless cars is that we have to be thinking about today the interface for blind people to utilize those cars on an equal basis. We don't want to be thinking about it when these cars are on the street. We need to be planning for it today. Blind people are going to use these cars, and we want to have equal access from the beginning. So we're actually using our experience in the Blind Driver Challenge as a way to get our foot in the door to really be in the leadership of the autonomous vehicle discussion.
And that's a great goal, to not have to play catch-up as we have with so many other technologies. It would be great if these self-driving cars were accessible right out of the gate. Have you been able to engage with other car manufacturers and developers of these systems? Are they receptive to these ideas?
Yes, we have a number of partnerships in this regard, and it's growing every day. You know, I presented at the Driverless Car Summit meeting as far back as 2012, and we continue to interface with Google and a number of the car manufacturers, with some of the technology producers that are working on various developments in these vehicles, as well with the policymakers that are beginning to talk about these issues.
So do you think your input is having an effect on the future designs of autonomous cars?
I think our message is beginning to make a difference. Some of these folks love the idea of blind people using these autonomous cars. They love to hold that up as that's the end game. You know that we've done a great job when even blind people are using these cars, and we've really shifted the conversation to, we don't want to be the end game. We want to be in from the beginning, and we're not driving these cars today. And, you know, many cars that are coming out have a lot of autonomous features, but we don't think they need to be foolproof before we can get blind people into them. So it's really by looking forward rather than by thinking about how do we get to what other people have today. You know, we're thinking about, well, how do we have equal access to what everybody's going to have tomorrow? You know, of course, transportation is an issue, but the real win is going to be taking advantage of all that these vehicles are going to offer everybody. You know, these vehicles are going to totally transform transportation in this country once they get there. You already see it happening in some communities, right, where in this generation, fewer people own cars. There's a higher tendency to utilize public transportation or shared transportation with Uber and Lyft. And so I think just making sure that blind people are included equally from the beginning, that's really going to be the win for us.
Before we ever told anybody that we were going to do a show on the Blind Driver Challenge, one of our listeners asked us to discuss blind pedestrian safety with all of these driverless cars that eventually will be on the roads, especially the hybrids that are so quiet. Do you have any comments on that?
I absolutely do. You know, we're actually ahead of the game on this because the National Federation of the Blind advanced the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act, which was signed by President Obama early in 2011. And that bill calls for minimum sound standards for hybrid vehicles. And those standards should be released, well, actually, maybe any moment. And those standards will apply to hybrids in the future, certainly autonomous hybrids. And we think that based on our advocacy that the regulations are going to be strong. We've worked with car manufacturers, sound experts, actually all over the world. We're working very actively on international standards for hybrids and noise through our participation in the World Blind Union. And so I think we're going to have great success in having these cars, even when they're autonomous, have a minimum sound standard. I am much more concerned about getting the interfaces in the car to be equally accessible than I am about how the cars will interact with pedestrians, because I think that's not just a blindness issue. There are lots of pedestrian concerns that we should have as Americans with how these cars are going to react to people, children out on the streets, and blind people, because of our advocacy, are actually ahead of the game on that.
As Mark predicted, in the time since we did the interview with him, the United States Department of Transportation's National Highway Traffic Safety Administration did in fact announce that it was adding a sound requirement for all newly manufactured hybrid and electric light-duty vehicles to help protect all pedestrians, especially those who are blind or have low vision. And that will make things much safer for those people. Now for this week's final item, how to learn more about the National Federation of the Blind and their programs, including their work with driverless and autonomous vehicles.
So if people would like to find out more about some of the NFB services or the Jernigan Institute or some of the topics we talked about, where would you send them?
Well, I would encourage people to go to the National Federation of the Blind website, nfb.org. There's a lot of great information there. You can also get our flagship publication, the Braille Monitor. You can get it online or we can send it to you in various formats. Certainly encourage you to stay plugged into what we do by following us on Twitter and liking us on Facebook. And I would encourage you also to visit one of our local chapter meetings or state affiliates. You can find information about where to find the Federation on our website. And I would encourage everybody to think about coming to our national convention, which in 2017 will be in Orlando in July.
And for people who want to find you on Facebook or Twitter, what would they look for?
You can look for National Federation of the Blind on Facebook, and you can follow NFB_voice on Twitter.
And is there an email or phone number if people had specific questions?
If you have questions, you can email our generic email address, nfb@nfb.org. I would also invite you to follow me on Twitter by using my last name, Ricco Bono, RICCOBONO. And you can always write to me at officeofthepresident@nfb.org. Should say, for those who still do this, you can call us at 410-659-9314.
And we'd like to end by congratulating the National Federation of the Blind for having their KNFB reader being recently announced as the winner of the Best Assistive iOS App in the Apple Viz Golden Apple Awards for 2016.
And as usual, if you're looking for any additional information about anything you've heard about in the show, go to the show notes for this episode at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You'll find it all there.
That's it for show number 1703. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about employment opportunities at NASA, the United States National Aeronautics and Space Administration. We'll be speaking with Kenneth Silberman and Evelina Felicite Marek about internships, fellowships, visiting positions, and other employment opportunities, especially for students. And although their programs are intended for everybody, they are encouraging students with disabilities to apply. This is a great opportunity to expand your STEM education and get a jump start on a STEM career. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-210-8094.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpey and Peter Torpey and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. Browse the full archive of programs, find instructions for subscribing to the podcasts, and much more at www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also find us on iTunes, follow us on Facebook and on audioboom.com, at Eyes on Success, or Twitter at @_EyesOnSuccess. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success and have a nice day.